Why was Frank Vogel's contract not renewed? Does Larry Bird really know what he wants? What's in store for the Indiana Pacers going forward? The only question left is, say it with me, you win? Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown podcast. I am extremely excited to bring on Candace Buckner, who is the Pacers reporter for the Indianapolis Star and as much of an insider as we are going to find anywhere. Candace, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Coach Nick.
Always a pleasure to interact with you. And it's not like we have a ton of things to talk about, but certainly one of them is the big news that dropped late last week that Frank Vogel was not being renewed, not fired, but not being renewed.
Semantics.
Wow. Is it just semantics or is there a difference there?
Well, I feel like when you're kicked to the curb, whether you're fired or dismissed or not renewed, it's not a good thing. So,
okay, that is true. And so I guess the real question, and everybody was flooding my timeline wanting to know sort of why, what this is about. Do I agree with it? And I thought, you know, I wanted to get your impression because you were there at the press conference asking questions and kind of trying to dig a little deeper. What did you feel about Larry Bird's, reasoning for for not renewing Frank Vogel?
Right. I thought his reasons were twofold. Of course, he mentioned right off the bat and he stressed it throughout his press conference that he feels that the team needs a new voice. And I believe right around 3 years is when he feels like a good coach even gets tuned out from his team. So it's about Frank has been there for 5 years plus the interim, the end of the 2011 season. So he's been, roughly 5.5 years. Larry feels that it's time for a new voice. The other reason, I believe it's really played into all of this, style of play. Larry's been wanting to change the style of play to a more up-tempo, better space, better pace, score more points. And although the Pacers did score more points overall this season, it's just not enough for what he was wanting, especially when you end the season scoring 84 points in the playoffs, which there's so much to talk about that and Larry's reasoning for that's just not enough. But he wants to change the system. He doesn't believe Frank Vogel is the coach to do that. Frank Vogel was dismissed. Or well, not picked up.
Okay, right. He was not renewed. So, I mean, now that's interesting because obviously I would think that everybody would want to run and everybody would want to score points. It's not like you don't want to do that. Did you feel like the loss in the first round to a much higher seeded Raptors team was what doomed him, or was this something that was going to happen no matter what?
Absolutely, was going to happen inevitably. I even think if he would have gotten them to the second round, it would have been even more difficult to do this. But at the end of the day, you know, Larry wants a different guy, and his guy at this point is not Frank Vogel, who is defensive minded, very talented coach. However, and you know what? I just go back to the other point. It does perplex me with the, you know, if you he told our Greg Doyle immediately after game 7, you know, if you would have told me we would have scored only 84 points. Well, it's the playoffs. Of all people, you know, Larry Legend, Hall of Famer, top 50 player should know that in the playoffs, in the postseason, things are slowed down and you don't get these. I mean, you look out to Golden State and Portland and they're just, I mean, they have Terry Stotts, who was the offensive coordinator for the 2010 champion Dallas Mavericks, and you have Steve Kerr and his Megatron out there. But you look at Miami and Toronto, and they're basically, you score first. You can't score that way in the playoffs, and it's befuddling to me how that's actually a point that Larry brought up, that we're not scoring enough points, 84 points in game 7. You really? You kidding me?
Right. I mean, and we've seen game 7s always go into like a grudge match. They're pushing, shoving. Right. No, everyone's nervous. So, I mean, I think that's clear. What you said was that it wasn't the fact that they lost game 7. It wasn't the fact that they, you know, I mean, they got in the playoffs and they probably, I think the overall year probably maybe wasn't as good as they expected to some degree.
True. But what were your expectations? You have Paul George And your big free agent pickup was Monte Ellis, who's 30 years old, who has two knee surgeries, who did not figure out his role until after the turn of the calendar. You have three big guys who were career backups in Jordan Hill, Jan Mahimi, and LaVoy Allen. And you have a teenager. And those are all your rotational big guys. So where are you finding this talent to score points, really?
Well, then that goes to the other point is, how many players had played for Coach Vogel for more than 3 years?
Exactly. Three. and George Hill's in the last year of his contract, so he may not be around. Really, he may not be around 2016, 2017. Jan is a free agent. I thought he made himself some money. And if they really do believe in Miles Turner, then why don't you turn the 20-year-old loose to be your starting center and allow Jan to, you know, get picked up on the free market? So you're basically dealing with Paul George, and that's all he's really known. He was riding the bench under Jim O'Brien before Vogel took over in an interim year. But, yeah, it's not like I don't understand that rationale. Well, you have three guys who respected you, and from what I saw, I didn't see any friction between Paul George and Frank Vogel. None at all.
Right. And I know Paul George a little bit, and he is one of those guys who's a really good teammate and a guy who isn't going to undermine a coach, as far as I could tell. Right. I mean, it seems clear that Larry Bird didn't talk to the players at all and weigh their opinion, right?
Yeah, and he brought that up in the locker room. Larry is very old school in the sense that this whole three-year theory he came up with, you know, that was during his playing days in the early 80s. And he also brought up Red Auerbach. You know, when I was playing, Red didn't ask me for my opinion. And, you know, when you're dropping, you know, Red Auerbach mentions in 2016, that shows you're from a different era. And I would imagine that, you know, Paul being your max guy, being your franchise guy, 2 years remaining left on his contract before the option, you might want to consider him into some of your decisions. You might.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, here's the interesting thing is that having observed Coach Vogel for all these years and been around him a little bit, it seems I think he might actually be officially associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance. And at the very least, when you watch him coach and hear him coach, he doesn't seem to be a screamer and a yeller. You couldn't say that his teams weren't tough. Those were tough teams that were physically going to get into you.
Right.
So I wonder if that old school notion you're talking about, Larry Bird, really didn't fit well with this newer version of like what coaching I think needs to be now, which is, you know, isn't the yelling, screaming kind of thing. Was that an issue at all in the last several years?
Well, you know, that's interesting. I was not here during the Jim O'Brien era. Of course, that was before me. But from what I understand, one of the reasons of course, they hadn't made the playoffs in 4 years, but one of the reasons, besides, you know, the lack of success on court, was that Jim O'Brien was a browbeater. Roy Hibbert kind of shriveled up underneath him, couldn't blossom, and he was yelling at the guys and getting on the guys, and that was one of the reasons why he let him go. And marching orders for Frank right off the bat was, you know, don't be that guy. And so... So Frank went totally opposite way, you know, lollipops and unicorns from that guy, very positive. But I do believe after a while, Larry wanted maybe to see them held more accountable. And you would see during the games, for 41 of the games, I'm at Bankers Life and I'm courtside. When Frank got on guys, it was the three guys in referee uniforms. So I thought a lot of the times his frustration with what he was seeing on the court, he just took it out on the referees. I'm not in the huddles. I'm not seeing, you know, if he is getting, you know, ripping the guys a new one. I'm not in the halftime. And I do understand at times he did, you know, there were some very colorful halftime, you know, speeches from Frank. And I don't think he's a shrinking violet or he was just, you know, oh, golly gee, let's just, you know, hug it out. I do think he got on some guys, but maybe not to the point or to the extent where maybe Larry was accustomed to.
Right. And the other question then is okay, fine. So he thinks that's going to get more out of the players in theory if you are sort of – this word accountable is really troubling to me. And I feel like it's become this buzzword where it doesn't really mean much because, of course, they're going through film. Of course, they're coaching these players and they're asking them to do things – I mean, I guess, does Larry want him to like have him to run suicides in practice? Is that what he's, is there any other detail we can figure out about what he means about that?
Maybe, and I'm extrapolating here. I don't know what exactly he meant, but there are times when Monte Ellis, who was very turnover prone, turn the ball over in the fourth quarter, crunch time, still has the ball in his hand, the next play, the next possession. Okay, you want to trust your guys. I get that. But maybe take him out. Make sure that he knows that he can't be that cavalier. And that was the problem with the Pacers very early on with Paul and Monte, just very cavalier at times when you would have to be on top of it, sharp. So yeah. Maybe that's it.
Interesting. And that is true. Okay, so the accountability does probably lead to playing time, which is also funny because – you know, if it's stars or the guys, the highest paid players in the team, there always seems to be this other pressure from like guys like Larry Bird to play those guys because they are getting paid so much. Right. So I think it sounded like something tells me that when Frank Vogel looks back on this, maybe 10 years from now, he might be like happy that he got out of the situation because it sounded like had he continued to stay, it would have been worse. I was also very troubled by Larry Bird's comments, and maybe he just didn't think about it, what he was going to say before the press conference started. But when he started to describe the discussions and how he let Coach Vogel know, it was kind of uncomfortable. Was it like that in the room as well?
Are you talking about with Frank asking?
Yeah, told him on the phone, and then just to fill in anybody who's listening doesn't know, he mentioned something, the fact that, like, Frank was, I don't know if he said he was begging for his job, but certainly he was, you know, it just made it sound really uncomfortable to me listening to it later.
Yeah, I don't think when he was telling us that, oh, no, I didn't meet him in person, I just talked to him on the phone, I don't think he realized how bad that came across. I mean, this is a guy who's been your coach for 5 years, and just talk to him on the phone. We don't have to meet face-to-face. And when Frank was saying on the phone, you know, can we meet face-to-face? Can you push back the press conference? By the way, this press conference was announced on Tuesday. It was a Thursday press conference. It was announced on Tuesday. So it's interesting to me that probably by that point, Larry Bird had decided, okay, we're not bringing him back, and that's what I'm going to talk about. And so he waited till the morning of the press conference to call Frank and let him know he's not coming back.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's a eesh moment. Like, why would you come off as very callous, but I was there. There were times I wrote in my story. There were about three times where I felt like he came close to choking up. Now Larry Bird is not going to cry in front of us, but there were some times where I felt as much as emotional that he can get, he came close to it. So I know it wasn't an easy decision, but he comes across as very callous in telling some of those stories the way that he did.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because it definitely I was listening to YouTube on my car, so I couldn't see what he was looking like. But it did sound that way, that he almost was getting emotional, which, again, was so foreign to me when you're talking about Larry Bird. So it's a weird thing because, by the way, Frank had been there as a video coordinator before he was a coach, right?
He was Jim O'Brien's assistant. So by the time he came to Indiana, he was out of the video room and he was on the bench.
Okay.
He's been around for a minute.
Right. So it's like not just the 5 years of a coach. He had been there for years before as an assistant, as part of the community. So, and
exactly.
That's, listen, it's hard. You know, Larry Bird's allowed to do whatever he wants to do for the betterment of the team. And, you know, there's no question. Like, I would watch their offense and, you know, okay, was it as clever as other people's offenses? You know, I suppose not. But then again, you know, would it have mattered with the lineup that he had? It just, you know, it was a bit of a weird, you know, I would have to imagine, right? The pieces didn't necessarily fit as well as you might would hope, I would say, right?
True. And not to completely just, you know, dump on this decision, Larry Bird had reasons. And what you're mentioning, one of the reasons, Ty Lawson, I don't think we saw the full Ty Lawson. I know he basically got hurt 5 minutes into his first game and was out for maybe a week, 2 weeks, something like that. So we didn't get to see the full Ty Lawson. Is that on the coach not using him right, or is that on Ty Lawson? He was also given, Evan Turner. Evan Turner ended the year in 2013-14 on the bench. Mm-hmm. He was given Chase Buttinger. Buttinger never truly understood his role before the Pacers got rid of him. And that's That's true. By the time they couldn't trade him, but by the time they had to waive him, you know, Chase was still confused as, what am I doing here? What do you want me to do? So that does go on the coach. How do you use your guys? You may not have, you know, world beaters, but, you know, these are, I'm not going to pretend that these aren't the most talented basketball players in the world. Mm-hmm. And so what are you doing with them?
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, I have to check again, but I feel like they did improve their pace, or at least as far as transition goes, I feel like, right? Didn't they start fast breaking a lot more this year?
They did. Yeah. They got out. They were a little bit more of a gambling team on the perimeter and getting steals. And so they were one of the leaders in, you know, points off turnovers, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't have all this stuff in front of me, but I know they were exceptional. They would win games when they would win that category, mostly.
I think the point where we're coming to as we amass all this information in one spot is that I don't think it was X's and O's. It doesn't really sound like, oh, right, I wanted to score more points, whatever, right? Does it really feel like that was the issue?
I'm stuttering, and I guess the simple issue was, you know, Larry wanted a different guy.
Yeah.
I don't want to assume, but, you know, Frank was the interim who kept winning. So how can you get rid of a guy who has the locker room, has the respect of the locker room, and he's winning, and he's each year he's taking you to a new level? How can you get rid of that guy?
Yeah, I mean, and that's really kind of frustratingly, you know, from a coach. I'm going to, you know, be sympathetic to the coach. It's just kind of frustrating that they're sort of waiting.
Of course you are, Coach Nick.
they're waiting for that moment. Oh, finally, we have a chance. We can just get rid of him. And here we are. And I don't think it's, unfortunately, it's not that fair. And as we move forward here, you mentioned some of the way the roster is now constructed. And by the way, I'm a huge Miles Turner fan. We did a breakdown of him in the middle of the year, and I think that guy is going to be a terrific big man in that new version of what big men are. Mm-hmm. And so you have that. You have Paul George, who's, you know, in the middle of his prime. And so, you know, is there going to be even more upheaval, you think, with going into next year with the roster?
I think there will. I'm not, again, Yamahimi will be 30 years old, so I'm not 100% sure that he can expect a long-term contract mm-hmm. out of the Pacers. From what I understand, they do like him. But people, if Larry, I'm not going to say if anymore, but Larry wants, you know, this new style, so why don't you go out and get a legitimate point guard? Why don't you also look at a true stretch four? So that starting five, or maybe even the depth of the Pacers, should look different next year.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Ty Lawson get a chance to be that point guard again, and then maybe you could move George Hill, or if he comes back or not. Like, he would probably want to be the shooting guard anyway, right?
Right, right. And the Pacers know he's on a very good contract. George Hill is with $8 million, I believe. So he's on a very good contract, but you know what you're going to get from him. He's around Paul, around Monte. He's not going to be aggressive. He's going to be a spot-up shooter. But if you're okay with that, and in the final year of his deal, you know, yeah, turn him into a two-guard for your starting two-guard. And I don't know what you do with Monte at that point.
Oh.
But I do think they need a legitimate point guard. George Hill is a bit too safe, and that's not his role. He'll be the first one to tell you he's not a point guard. And Monte's a bit too risky, and he's not a point guard.
Right. Well, here, I'm interviewing for the job now as for the Pacers coach, and here's what I would pitch. I would say install Ty Lawson as a starter, and then you make Monte into that Jamal Crawford role and have him win Sixth Man of the Year the next 3 years in a row, and then you get
Miles
Turner.
But you're paying
him
$11 million.
What's that?
You're paying him $11 million.
To come off the bench? $11 million with a new contract, with a new CBA. You know, the way everyone makes it sound, that's probably going to be a deal. If he gives you, I don't know, 16, 17 points off the bench, and you can limit the effect he has with the bad turnovers and maybe the bad shots, then heck, that might be a deal.
Right, I like that, but what do you do with Rodney Stuckey? They're the same player.
Did you see, I mean, Stuckey had a couple moments in the playoffs that really made me want to shake my head. Is he that guy that's going to be have a problem being the fourth guard off the bench or the second guard off the bench?
As long as he's in the rotation, because he doesn't want to start. He does not want to start.
Okay.
So I think he's all right as long as he's getting rotational minutes.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
they all say that until, you know, there's a problem.
Right. And I thought Jan Mahimi did a very nice job. I don't know if there's going to be an upgrade out there that they could get, you know, that works for them. But, you know, he was fine. And then, you know, Paul George. So Paul George, the whole power forward experiment, I didn't keep my eye on it enough. Did that end up fizzling out?
That fizzled out basically in preseason. He never played a minute at power forward.
Wow.
During the regular season.
Okay. See, that's too bad, and that could be the accountability too. I mean, I know you want to keep him happy, but it just seems to me that there's a lot of opportunities there, especially with where we're going, to actually get him. Because, I mean, he is so versatile, and I think he could kind of front a low post player a little bit. I know it's a little, you know, you got to get a little physical, but I wish he wouldn't just sort of dismiss it. I feel like there's something there.
Well, I wonder if that's something that Larry will say with the next coach, if he really is going to go back to last summer and press, hey, I want Paul George playing some at the four, and the next coach will have to do it. But Paul George made it known in the summer that, you know, I'm not a four. He made it known after the first preseason game when he faced Anthony Davis, and that would make anybody say, hey, I'm not a four. Get me out of here. But no, at that time they started, you know, experimenting with CJ at the four. Mm-hmm. And so when the regular season unveiled, CJ was your four. But I mean, if Larry is hell bent on playing small, and he did say that was his quote, I like the small ball, even now. So do you find a coach that is going to play Paul at the four, or do you go out and get a Ryan Anderson or a true stretch or true stretch four?
I used to like Ryan Anderson, but the guy just can't stay healthy, and
right.
I'm not even sure he's as consistent a shooter, and perhaps it's the health thing, as we think at this point. So, and by the way, even if he did come and he was the best version of himself, I don't know if that is what does it, right? Like, that's, you know, it's a tough situation. And again, another reason why maybe Frank Vogel got to the point where this roster is sort of untenable, and they're not in the great, you know, no offense, but the market might not attract a huge name free agent. And so, you know, it might have been a thing where they're gonna sort of stuck in this weird warp there where, you know, maybe it's going to be good, which then leads to the question, you know, is Coach Vogel going to get a job for next year? Do you have any feelings on that?
Well, you look at the openings, and, you know, even when there were, you know, rumblings that, you know, Frank wasn't coming back, and I was thinking about this during the playoffs, I was like, well, it's perfect out there in Houston for him. He goes back to Boston with Daryl Morey. I know he interviewed for that job back in 2011, right before the Pacers removed the interim tag. So, boom, you have, you know, if Dwight comes back, you have your rim protector. You have a superstar scorer, so there will be no problems with offense. Maybe he could build the togetherness, and that was what he was big on here. He could build the togetherness down in Houston. So, boom, there he goes. And then Memphis opens up, and I'm like, you got your two bigs. You got your smash mouth already in order. You have the relationship again, going back to Boston with Chris Wallace. So that is perfect. Small market. You know, he is a family man with two kids, two small children. All they've known as Indianapolis, Indiana. Of course, that's a small market, so maybe fit in there. But I also thought New York was a wild card just because – he's charismatic enough to deal with New York media.
Well,
and he's already been under the thumb of a very domineering president, so he would be used to Jackson.
Right. I had tweeted out the other day, I said, in Memphis, we've secretly replaced our Dave Yeager with Frank Vogel. Let's see if they notice. because, yeah, that would be a very seamless transition. And it was funny because, obviously, you know, Yeager had asked for permission to speak to teams like 2 or 3 years in a row or something crazy, which I think indicates that he already had the job with the Kings
right.
as he left. But I would say that, yeah, any of those places. I mean, I think the whole point when you're like, it's kind of like when you're an actor and you become hot. You know, you want to take all the roles because you're afraid you're never going to get another role again. And I suspect that with Coach Vogel, like, he might want to be able to, you know, he doesn't want to lose connection with the NBA for too long. So,
well, it worked for Scott Brooks. And that's a great situation that he's in.
It is?
I like DC. I know they underachieved this year, but I really like it. It's not just because I'm a St. Louis girl, so I have to, you know, give a shout out to Brad Beal, St. Louis boy, homeboy.
Yeah.
Nice. But I do like that backcourt. I like Marcin Gortat, even though he's getting older. I like Porter. I like a lot of things about that team. And maybe they were going through the same transformation as the Pacers, kind of forced to go small, and they didn't really know or recognize or do well in their new identity. But I do like D.C.
Speaking of you know, the three-year rule that Larry Bird instituted, it sounds like maybe Whitman dealt with that in reality. But I think they also had an issue. We're going to do an article about it, I think, where there was an inordinate amount of players on their contract year. And I think that GMs need to be a lot more careful with how they construct a roster, because once you get three or four of those guys on the same team, I don't know how any coach can manage that real easily, short of maybe like Popovich or something. But and by the way, Popovich gets away with it because he plays all of his players a lot of minutes. All right. Well, this has been really sort of interesting information here. And I think we've kind of, you know, figured out a little bit more of what's going on with Indiana. I don't want to ask you to speculate about, you know, who they want to hire or not. But that said, has there been any reports, at least, of who they want to bring in to interview?
No reports as far as, you know, set in stone who they're coming to interview. But we at the Star did, you know, toss out some names. Some are more interesting than the others. You know, Whitman, Randy Whitman, formerly of DC, the Wizards, Mike Woodson. I'm not so 100% sure if, you know, those are going to come to fruition. But the others that make sense would be Brian Shaw, who was an associate head coach under Vogel before Denver. Mark Jackson, point guard under Bird on the Pacers teams. And, you know, a name that just keeps getting bandied about every now and then, Mike D'Antoni. If you want to score more points, who would be better than D'Antoni to execute that? And, of course, they have Nate McMillan, who is associate head coach currently, and of course he coached Sonics, coached the Blazers, was on Team USA, so he has experience.
Those are all interesting names. I mean, if you're bringing up Whitman and Woodson, are there any other Hoosiers you want to bring up? Maybe like, is Bobby Knight available? You know, but with all those names said, it seems to me that I bet you Mark Jackson is the guy that becomes a front, if Mark Jackson wants to get back into coaching. Someone tells me that I don't know, the connection between him and Bird and the way he is a little that old school thing. The only issue is the scoring is, you know, did he hold the Warriors back with what he did on offense? And would that be against what Larry wants? I don't know.
You read all those stories, you know, in the post-Mark Jackson era of how his offense was pretty rudimentary, right?
A lot of ISO post-ups, and they didn't kind of let, you know, Curry blossom like Curry did. So, yeah, that's for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, hey, maybe he learned, you know. It's like with Byron Scott here in L.A., we're always wondering, like, when was the last time you think he ever went to, like, a coaching clinic? Like, that's my question for a lot of the NBA coaches, because there's so much new stuff, and when you have the players from that era – in the 80s and the 90s. And remember, when they played then, that means what they grew up with is from the 50s and the 60s. And that was very dogmatic of a time. So I wonder, you know, the interesting thing about Shaw and the triangle, and then talking about where Vogel might go, is that there was some triangle action. In fact, I need to go and dig it up because I was going to do a big breakdown on it. Where the Pacers had some triangle concepts based on what Shaw was, you know, there when he's as an assistant. So that seems to me that the Knicks would be an interesting place for him.
For Brian Shaw
For Brian Shaw, Vogel. For Vogel.
Oh, for Vogel. Yeah. And again, I go back to connections. Frank Vogel's kind of been around forever. And so he was a Lakers scout for like a hot second back in 2006. I'm not going to say the year because I'm going to totally blow it out. Okay. So he only had like one conversation with Phil Jackson. But again, he has connections because he has been around, never played in the league. But this is one of the more well-traveled, very knowledgeable guys. He's been around this league for 2 decades.
Right. And I'm like 6 months older than him. You're making me feel like really old. How can a guy like my age be so well-traveled? But he is. And, you know, Thibodeau's the same way, too. I think he started at like 22 or something crazy. So you start early enough, you get around. And certainly you've been getting around with all the information on the Pacers. I can't thank you enough for coming on and breaking it down for us.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Thanks so much. I would like to come back anytime.
That'd be beautiful. We'll definitely have you on probably when they hire a new coach, and we can dissect that, and we'll see what's going on. So, again, thanks for coming on the show. And don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel. We're a conversation. You in? Are you in, Candace?
Sure. I guess I should go, like, yes!
Yeah, that's it.